Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Linda?
I'm good. How are you, Linda?
We're hanging in here as usual, I guess, but worried about the ice, but nothing we can do about it. So
you have to go out today?
No, we were supposed to get our vaccine at CVS in Stafford yesterday, and it got pushed up to Friday. So we're supposed to go out tomorrow to try to get our vaccine in Stafford, so I'm worried about the ice. So we'll see how tomorrow is.
I think they canceled all the vaccines that were supposed to be given today at the Fairfax Government Center, which is probably gonna.
Yeah, I heard that. We're still on the list from Fairfax Government, and I called. Peggy said she called again, and I called again to confirm we're on the list. And we signed up on the 18th, and we haven't, you know, we're like haven't heard anything yet for Fairfax.
Well, we were signed up for the 18th. At 5 o'clock today or something like that. And we got an email yesterday saying they were closed and please reschedule on this site. So we did that. You can do that.
Okay. So when are you scheduled for, Linda?
The next available time that they could give us that we could take is the 24th, February 24th.
So you've got, Linda, you've got on the site and rescheduled it yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because we got an email from them yesterday. You didn't get an email saying that they were all
no, we didn't get an email yet, because when we signed up originally in the morning about 11:30, we got a message back confirming that we had an appointment, but we never got a text or anything else. And then my friend said to try again, and we tried again like at 7:30 at night and finally got through and got on, but we've never gotten a text back to schedule something from Fairfax yet.
We got an email. We didn't get a text.
No, we haven't gotten an email from Fairfax yet. But they had 42,000 people signed up on the 18th, and they're way behind in setting up appointments. So
42,000 people, that's phenomenal.
we got on CVS's site last week, and we signed up. We were supposed to have it Wednesday, this yesterday, and they wrote us Tuesday and said they don't have any vaccines not to come. It was in Stafford. And my in-laws, my son's one father-in-law got it in Gainesville, but his mother-in-law was also scheduled for Alexandria yesterday, and she got pushed to tomorrow. And Peggy Nelson was in Winchester for Wednesday, and she got pushed till tomorrow. So we'll see if they even have it tomorrow. I don't know if the deliveries will be there.
Are they pushing it if it's the second vaccine or only if it's the first?
This is the first. We haven't gotten the first yet. So we keep trying. And I don't know how the weather will be, or if they, I don't want to drive all the way there and then not have vaccines not be available. And part of the problem is the delivery, the airplanes can't get out of Memphis or St. Louis coming from the Pfizer and the Moderna sites. So the weather is definitely a factor. So we'll see. But I haven't gotten anything from Fairfax government. We did call and we confirmed that we're on the list, but they haven't emailed us.
Okay.
So that's that news. So.
Good morning. I woke up about 10 minutes ago. I was like, made myself some tea and here I am. Okay.
You have nowhere to go. It's solid ice.
Your pajamas on under, you know, bottoms.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm going to, just so you know, I'm going to be sneaking off early. Something came up at work and I need to get on it sooner rather than later.
How are you feeling?
I'm doing really well. Thank you. I got the okay to start exercising last week.
Oh, I've that's great.
Riding my stationary bicycle, and if it was nice outside, I'd be trying to go run or something. I don't know. Maybe well, down to the end of the driveway and back.
Don't run today, John.
No, I walked out with the dog and was sliding around.
Ooh, don't want to fall.
No. No. I can save that for later.
Hi, Phyllis.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. This has certainly been a bleak winter.
It's not even pretty out there.
Yeah.
I was so pretty this morning.
Carol, how are you guys?
We're okay. Thank you. Please.
I owe you a call later.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Morning.
Morning, Barbara.
The sanctuary, bright and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary. Vea suli mikdash v'shachanti v'tocham vea suli mikdash v'shachanti v'tocham. Just sit for a moment. The idea of sanctuary in this week's Torah portion, being a sacred space. Just see it rather than sitting in a sacred space. If you can sit with being a sacred space. So God calls us this week in Torah to build a sanctuary, a sacred space. We are at times, more often or less often, thinking about missing our sanctuary, our communal sacred space. And it's an important place. All of the sanctuaries that right now are not being used are important places. But I think that the Torah has some deeper wisdom for us. A reminder this week that the Mishkan, so I began with combination of our sacred text, words from this week's Torah portion, Ve'asuli Mikdash, V'shachanti B'tocham. I will, God says to make for, the people should make for God a Mikdash, a holy place from Kodesh, V'shachanti B'tocham, and I will dwell, so for those of you who know Hebrew, it's plural, I will dwell not in it, but among them, in them. So that the Mikdash, or the Mishkan, which comes from the same word, a dwelling place, from the same word as shachanti, to dwell among, that the sacred place that we're supposed to build is for not for God to dwell in it, but for God to dwell in us, in the people. The space is a representation, a reminder of what each of us needs to build, to cultivate, and to nurture inside ourselves, for God to dwell b'tocham, within us, within the people. And I know we've encouraged thinking in these last 11 months, as our homes are right an extension of the sanctuary, each a mikdash me'at, each a little holy place. But really, the holy place that we're supposed to build and hold for God is within each of us, which of course is easier said than done. That's why we practice. We need special tools. And the words of Torah remind us of some of these special tools. There are special materials that are supposed to be used to build the mikdash, things that are not easily acquired. In Torah, there are colors and textures and particular materials that are rare and unusual. But a reminder, special things, unusual things, it's not easy. There are special processes to build this mikdash. In Torah, the menorah is meant to be made of one solid piece of gold. Think about like the Chanukiot, right? The menorah is the seven-branched light, but think about like metallic creations and how much harder it is to make it from one piece, not putting all the pieces together, but from one piece, and to understand that we are all, right? We're all one piece. So again, special processes to do this. And then there's the communal commitment. We're all called to build the Mishkan, or the Mikdash, the holy place. We have to do it together. Everybody is supposed to participate, so we're not alone. And everybody has to bring a half shekel. Everybody has to bring a little bit of something to make it happen. So to create a space for God is a complicated endeavor. Create a space inside of ourselves, in our soul, is also a mighty endeavor. We know that the connection between the outer concrete space, God's presence that we invite into our inner space, they're connected because of that same word, right? The Mishkan that is out there is the Shekhinah, God's presence. Same Hebrew word, the Shekhinah, that protective presence of God that we invite to dwell within us, a place, an experience where we're protected. So I was thinking about building anything, whether it's, you know, a Lego set. I've seen some really interesting Lego sets. Even our preteens are into Lego these days, which is really cool, like amazing, amazing things. But whether it's a Lego set or building a strategy or building a cake, or a house, or a sanctuary, or a habit requires a plan. Every moment, our brains are planning for all kinds of things, not often things that matter, but we're always planning. And a lot of times our brains are working automatically, which is good, right? Because we wouldn't want to be having to consciously plan for every step that we take, everything that we reach for. There are automatic things that happen. But many of our plans, our building plans, become habitual. So they go beyond the automatic to become habits. They come from the stories, the narratives, the stories that shape us. The Israelites had that too, right? Slavery was their main narrative. They just couldn't escape it. We are slaves. We lack food. We got food in Egypt. We weren't afraid. We were afraid, like that whole piece. But that large experience shaped their behaviors and their choices even to come. Each of us are immersed in our own stories. And so a mindfulness practice allows us, encourages us, helps us to become conscious of the stories that shape us. It becomes a way that we can choose which of those stories, which of those identities, which of those pieces we want to keep, what we want to discard, what we want to trade out and change, what we want to adapt. I love this quote from Mahatma Gandhi. You know it. He says, "Your beliefs become your thoughts. Your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your values. Your values become your destiny." So our stories and beliefs are like the core of who we are, but they're not unchangeable. Stress. So I'm still thinking about building, but I'm in this building and planning, you know, stress. We start too many weeks talking about COVID and vaccines, right? But that's where we are. It's stressful right now. The stories and narratives and beliefs that even that we thought we rewrote, that we fixed, that we changed, that we erased, that we replaced, can still rise to the surface when we're feeling anxious, fearful, stressed, overwhelmed, strung out, however you describe it, however that may be for you, however often or infrequent that happens. And our stories, each of our narratives don't develop like in a vacuum. Right? They're shaped by all of our years and all of our experiences. They're shaped by our connections to other people. They're shaped by the things we've done. Some are positive, some are negative. Human beings are more pre-wired to recall critical experiences than positive ones. It's a stereotype, so obviously it's a generalization, but there's studies that talk about this negative bias that is often a part of our wiring. Negative events are often more remembered in greater detail, more accurately than positive ones. Positive ones are remembered in more experiential ways. I haven't read enough of the research. I wonder if we hold on to the experience of the positive, but the negative, like the detail, we can also keep at bay. Like we could remember all the details, but our brains are wired for often remembering and glomming onto negative things more than positive ones. And there's language studies that have been done, at least in Western cultures, that there are more elaborate language constructs to describe negative emotions than there are to describe positive ones. It's pretty awful. However, even with all of that, just because we remember something in detail and recall things more readily, those negative things don't have to be traumatic, right? We can manage our narratives. I think part of what the Israelites go through is that there's a narrative, right? We're to create this holy space in ourselves, and there's a narrative, but you have to work at letting it go. It doesn't just go away just because you step out of the situation that it might have arisen in. But we all live out our stories in one way or another. And if we pay attention to them, some are more empowering and some are more limiting. You know, it's that old expression, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if we can change our tools, we can see what's in front of us potentially differently or add to our tools. So, you know, by the time we are reaching adulthood, our rehearsed them for years. If we can consciously attend to them, they don't have to be inflexible or habitual features of our mental and emotional and spiritual landscape. They don't have to be. Just because they're ours, what happens often is we just become attached to them because they're ours. And we don't look at them or examine them enough to see if they actually still serve us. And so without conscious attention, we may not even actually discern that they're just the stories we tell ourselves, the narratives we tell ourselves, the identities that we label on ourselves. So even though our stories, our plans influence who we are, how we perceive things, how we react to things, we don't have to be destined to live them out. Their strength comes from their habitual nature. And when we look at them, when we don't just rely on them blindly for perception, especially when we're chronic, if we're stressed or reactive or fearful or acting on autopilot, which is when they arise, we can observe them differently. A mindfulness practice, a sitting, a noticing, helps us pay attention to all of those plans that are running through our head, whether it's a plan of where we're going or a plan of how we're going to deal with something, a plan of what we're going to make, even a conscious plan of what we want to create or build. When we can observe all of that and see those stories and identities that we tell ourselves, that we live, that managing that incessant stream of commentary that we have, the best way we can hold that and use that in a more positive way for ourselves and a conscious way for ourselves is to step back and view those things objectively, right? This is one of the hallmarks we've talked about, experienced, practiced, tried, struggled with in mindfulness, right? Is learning to observe and attend to our bodies, to our minds, to our experiences without judgment. You know, and there's the judgment part of judgment like comes in layers. You might have sat at the beginning and by the time we were sitting for a minute or two, forgotten what I asked you to think about. I'm not going to even ask if anybody did because I don't care. And then you go, oh my God, I can't remember what she said. Oh my God. And then you're like, shh, shh, shh. For whoever those are of you. And that's okay, right? That's also judgment, right? So letting that go as well, like, oh yeah, okay, look at that. I was sitting here breathing and I forgot what I was thinking about. So what am I gonna think? So then the question is, rather than going down the self-criticism or oh my God, or like, so where am I right this minute? Because whatever she said a minute ago doesn't really matter. Like, where am I now? I'm just here as a guide. I'm just here to like poke things at us. But the reality is the practice is each of ours individually. How do we learn to attend more to our own, to our body, to our mind, to our spirit, with love and kindness and without judgment, so we can see what is true, what is really happening for us in this moment? When we add that meek dwells within us, that's not then just a theoretical spiritual space opening to God, but it's actually the physical form of our bodies, right? How do we invite God into, or open ourselves in, go open God ourselves for God to be in this place with us, in this physical place with us? you know, think about just when we think about our breathing, we can think about like where our breath goes. How are we sitting? Where is the alignment? We've explored that sometimes. So the physical experience of our bodies, but to do that too without judgment, where we're limited, where we're hurting, where we can move one day and can't move the next day. You know, if you do any sort of exercise, you all know that like one day you do something really easily and then the next day it's like, didn't I do this before? What happened? And then the next day, maybe it's different. So our bodies are constantly changing. So how can we also, like the Mishkan is also this physical being, and to explore habits that then bring us out of alignment or bring us into alignment, to balance like that paying attention. So as we're sitting here and as I'm talking, you know, there's all kinds of things that may have arisen for each of you. You may be bored. You may be intrigued. You may be thinking about something I said 5 minutes ago. How can we continue to work on just being aware of what is present? Where are distractions go? What is part of our, like that story, that narrative, that what we're paying attention to? And how can we, rather than just be passive to all of that happening or habituated to all of that happening, see more clearly so that we can create a place of God's presence, that Mishkan, that planning for that inside of ourselves, in the midst of any experience? How can we draw upon that even in the midst of stress? So I'm going to read one more poem I really just liked, that I liked about it's more about paying attention to details, which in my mind was about planning. And then we're going to sit for a bit with some thoughts about our stories. This is called Visitation by Carrie Newcomer. Sunlight, winter white. Clean, clear, not a smudge of gray. Nothing to dull it down or soften the blow. So bold and audacious that it quickens the breath and startles the eye. It's always the quality of light that nearly flattens me with wonder, filling me up and spreading out like liquid into the corners of my eyes, all the way to the edges of my peripheral vision. First, we see from the center. We notice what is obvious, although to grasp even that may take some time. But then from there, we begin to glimpse what lives at the margins, barely perceived, like a suggestion of color or fine shade of meaning. I love what I catch at the corners when I'm not looking at the thing directly, or even looking for it at all. This is what delights me the most, the pause, the moment when there is a shift in the light, a sudden blur of wings, a movement in the snow. And when I turn to see, it's always gone, leaving me with only an intuition or impression of the briefest visitation. What are the things that we pay attention to? What are the things that catch our eye? What are the things, and part of those things that catch our attention are wired into the things that we tell ourselves about ourselves. So in being able to perhaps even think about, plan for making ourselves a sanctuary, I wanted us to do a little bit of practice with this idea of our story, right? Our narrative. So when I talk about narrative, I'm not talking about long stories necessarily. Like there's all the stories of our lives, but when I'm talking about our personal, like bits of narrative, they're the things that we tell ourselves, right? The identity. It's not a linear story when I use that term. It's the It's the way we identify and define ourselves. So some of those things are often when somebody asks you, like, who are you? What are you? You're often going to talk about, most people go to the things that they do, the jobs that they hold. I'm a mother. I'm a father. I'm a daughter. I'm a painter. I'm a CPA. So there's the jobs. And then there's the qualities. Like, what are some of the qualities? How do you describe who you are? Those are like the pieces of your narrative. And they're important to pay attention to because they shape how we look at things. If part of our narrative is, I'm really bad at math, that's going to shape how you see dealing with your checkbook or your finances. It's going to shape how you interact with kids when they're doing homework. It's going to shape how you look at a receipt at the supermarket. And are you really bad at math? So the idea of thinking about like a particular piece of your narrative, but lifting up one piece, it could be, I take care of others. It could be a belief or an influence that you know has helped shape you. I'm stubborn. I don't know. I'm giving you a few ideas, but like whatever is going to arise for you is going to arise for you. Here's what I want to do. I want you to pick one piece of that personal narrative that you tell yourself. Think maybe they're evident to us when we are in situations all the time, sort of that little voice that says, I can do this, I can't do this, I'm good at this, I'm bad at this, I like this, I don't like this, I believe this, I don't believe this. Those are all parts of our narrative. And we take them for granted. We take that story and go, yep, that's me. Because it's been me for so long. And it's what it has become a part of me. But as I said earlier, just because it's there doesn't mean we're owned by it. So part of practice is identifying, is sitting with those pieces and going, does that work? Is that really me? Do I like that? Out. I'm shy. I don't like crowds. I need to be around people. All of these statements that we say that we believe are truths about us are our narratives. Whether or not they're really true is for us to determine. And even if they are true in the moment, when we pay attention to them, we have the opportunity to adapt them, to say, that piece, don't like it anymore. I want this piece there instead. And then we can make, and not just guided by these habitual thoughts. So not to be overwhelming, one thing, just one descriptive phrase that you would think about for yourself. And I just want you to sit for a minute and I'll even let you sift through, like, because something might come up a little bit, but I'm going to give you like a minute to just sit and sort of sift through with one piece that you're going to sit with. Okay. And then I'll tell you, I'm going to ask you some things once you're holding that. Okay, so stick with one. One of your stories. And as you are looking at that, I want you to notice or consider where that story came from. And don't get too attached to your thoughts, just observe. And as you're unwrapping where this story came from, wonder, is it actually your story or is it someone else's that you've absorbed? And how is this story still true of you or not? And how does this story, this piece, contribute to who you are now? Does it bring you comfort, joy, happiness, contentment? Does it undermine living more peacefully or evenly? And so as you sit with this piece of your story, to consciously decide if it's a something you want to continue to be a part of who you are? Or is there something you wish to change or let go about it? And then build your mikdash. Consciously build the holy space inside of you for God to be present in that piece of your story as you choose it to be. I think we can only build our holy places, our sanctuaries for God to dwell within us when in every moment that there's a piece of narrative that comes up, you're doing something. You can't do it in every moment. That would be paralyzed. But like, take time to notice, reflect at the end of a day, the end of a week. Sort of, can you go back and look at some piece of the story of who you are and hold it and look at it and examine it and see where it is for you now. If it's something that you want consciously to be a part of you or how you want it to adapt, that's how we can create and reshape our own stories, which we have to. We're always just going to be run by them. And they are ours, but they do not have to have the hold over us that we generally let them, because we've created them. So we have the ability to reshape them. And those are what shape, actually, I think, our inner sacred space. That's what I was thinking about as I was thinking about this, the sanctuary this week, and the sanctuaries that we need inside of ourselves till we come together again in a physical place outside of ourselves. Any reflections or questions or thoughts, challenges? I like challenges.
I thought there was a very good analogy of the sanctuary within ourselves, and then there's some things that are negative and there's some things that are positive, and then we can reshape the positive ones to make it feel better, especially on a gloomy day like today and times ahead, and we're almost at 11 months of this, so there is good things about it. I wouldn't have participated in this mindfulness, I don't think if we had not had time to do this, this is good. And I thank you for it.
Am I frozen?
No.
Okay. I might be cold, but.
Does the weather have anything to do with it?
With what?
Everything's all frozen, messed up.
I don't know. It's definitely, there's definitely not as good connectivity today.
No.
I'm glad you said that because I just received a little notice on my screen that said your internet connection is unstable.
Unstable.
So I didn't know if it was just me. So
I don't know. Could be Zoom. I don't know.
So I wanted to say, to me, I think the challenge of mindfulness is to find a way to make our story okay, not to decide whether we want to keep that our story or get rid of our story, but find a way to. So this was hard for me.
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think we have, I think it's okay to say, you know what, I've said this about myself, or I've thought this about myself, or it's been me for all this time, but I actually don't like that. And I can do something about that.
So to be mindful of how we feel about it.
But with what is at the moment, because whatever change we want to make isn't going to happen instantly, right? So, Meryl, yeah.
I agree. I think in principle with what you're saying, I think where I'm struggling is that there are certain things that we may not like that because of like maybe there's a chemical imbalance or something in our brain that it's not something that we can necessarily just say like, I don't like this. And so I'm going to make the choice for it to not be part of my personality anymore, but that we can work on like, how do we not keep it from letting us live our life the way we want to live our life. So like for like me, and I talk about this a lot because I do a lot of advocacy in the mental health because I want to help reduce that stigma. So I'll say like, well, I have social anxiety, right? So like anxiety is something that maybe doesn't ever totally go away. You're like, it's always there, but you can learn that to not hide behind that label, to not do the things you want to do. So like you can work on like being brave and saying like, even though I have anxiety because I want to do that thing, and I'm not going to hide behind that as an excuse to not do the thing I want to do. But that sounds like a little different maybe than what you were saying.
No, I think that's exact. Look, I mean, I could dye my hair, but I have brown hair. Like I could straighten my hair, but I have curly hair, right? Mm-hmm. There are things that are like, while we could physically alter things, right? Mm-hmm. If I have a heart condition, I have four fingers, like whatever it is, like there are things that we, but the story behind it that we tell ourselves of what we, of who we are because of that, or what we can or can't do because of that, that's narrative. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm 5'2". I'm never going to be 5'10".
Right.
So it's not about saying, okay, so I'm just going to be tall, but it's, you know, is there something wrapped up in my being 5'2" that is, you know, a part of what I've always told myself I can or can't do, or can or can't be, or should or shouldn't be, that I'm either, that's either fine. Like, so that's the, those are the narrative. That's the narrative, right? Mental illness is mental illness, physical illness. Like, they're real, that they're, and they're not, well, they decide to say, if I have rheumatoid arthritis, that, you know, tomorrow I'm done with rheumatoid arthritis. I don't want that anymore. Okay, I don't want that anymore. I'm sure I don't want that anymore. But is my story, you know, I'm not strong. Is my story, I am strong. Is my, like, what around the affixed things that we are, are the stories that we've told ourselves that are in fact so ingrained that we think they're part of that. That we think they're part of that. And that's where we have control. But by the same token, the mindfulness practice is also, it's, it is both, right? It's to also be, we're on a journey. So I also work to just be with where I am right this moment. But also recognizing that, that the, our, the narrative that we create around ourselves, we have the ability to at least notice. Even if we just notice that that's what drives us. And then in a conscious way, we have ability to shift that narrative. Yeah, Barbara.
Well, so the metaphor I like is, like, this is like our story, and we can either have our story right in front of our face so it's all we see, or we can put it out there. So we still see our story, but we can see all the rest of this too. So it's still there. It is what it is, right? But there's a lot more to us.
And yes, and it isn't always what it is. It doesn't always have to be what it is. Not all of it. You know, I, the example that I gave, you know, I'm bad at math. Really? Is that like something born in, or is it something that I've been told and didn't do well at, and so wasn't encouraged at, and so didn't do it, and so avoid, like, so, you know, at you know, in midlife, it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm really bad at it, but, like, am I really bad at it, or was it just a behavior, a pattern, a thought pattern that got so ingrained that it's, you know, it's the Mahatma Gandhi, right? Our beliefs become our thoughts, become our deeds, words become our deeds, become our actions, become who we are. So, like, there's that piece of us too. And that's where, even with the things that are fixed, we can shift our perspective of who we are around those fixed things. And they don't have to, even those fixed things don't, right? When I say who I am, like, is it, you know, Joanne, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I actually have literally experienced that, because my whole life I was told I couldn't sing. My parents told me, you know, around everyone. And in another situation, I met someone who sings and teaches people to sing. And when she heard that, she was so offended that I had been given this story my whole life. She said, you know, kids are taught that, you know, they can sing, they can't sing. And she taught me that I could sing. And I took lessons with her. And it's not always greatest, but, you know, I can carry a tune and, you know, all these things that I had told myself, you know, I would never be able to do. And I love singing because, you know, I take your class. You know? It's, you know, it was just amazing to learn to see that and find that I could actually, you know, through her teaching me, could actually sing. So, you know, it's a big dream of mine.
That's wonderful. And look, part of the mindfulness is to examine things and go like, yes, that is actually really true. Right? But to develop a conscious awareness of like who we are and how those stories serve us. Because if we really want to open to a greater presence, like if we're talking about building the sanctuary within, the holy place within, that place has to be pure and holy, tried and true, as Randall Scruggs wrote, right? That it can be a sacred space. What a great conversation. Thank you. Well, may your Zooms be faster today. Maybe they're being frozen. I don't know. I'm on most of the day, which doesn't bode well for my day.
Stay inside somewhere.
Yeah.
Thank you, Cantor Caro.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Be glad we have power. The people in Texas
are right.
Oh, God. Oh, God,
that's
yes.
True. And keep your devices charged.
Yeah, yes. Barbara, happy birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Barbara.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.